Any places in particular that you think you made an impact?
I remember, Den, a little... I'm sure we made an impact in all of them, but I remember doing a November fire show up in Trebannock with Riley and Ali, and Trebannock had... They told us there was 100% unemployment in Trebannock. It's a tiny pithead town, and it's at the top of the hill with the workings, and because there's no mine, there's no workings, so there was no employment. There was a bigger town at the bottom of the hill, which was better off, and there was employment there. But Trebannock apparently had nothing. Like, it had a school, but even the teachers didn't live up there. I don't even remember a shop up there.
I do remember a shop, but it was behind lots of bars. It was
It was great. It was really quite a such a sad, harsh little town. Anyway, we've been doing workshops with the kids for a couple of weeks, making sculptures, teaching them a bit of swinging and staffs and little tricks with fire and stuff. And basically, we were going to build... we did build a stage, and the kids were going to come on and they were going to do their own little show. And we had a few theatrical pyros to set off, and we had a big flaming... a great big picture of possibly a phoenix or possibly a dragon for that one that we were going to burn, and all the community were coming out because it was their kids doing the show. Anyway, whilst we were on the setup for the day, we were rigging pyros and building the stage, and these kids just chucking bangers at us and throwing things at us. And when we finally accosted them, it turned out to be the same kids who were coming to do the show later on that evening. They were the ones that we'd been doing the workshop with. Like, little shits, you know, just pack it in, because otherwise we'll cancel the whole show. Oh, you're right, sorry, yeah.
Well, they on stilts, didn't they? They all got
them stilted
a bit pissed,
up,
didn't they? I think they all
did they?
Yeah, because Sarah's told a story about that gig, and the kids were on stilts, but they'd all managed to get some cheap booze.
Oh well, yeah, quite possibly. I'm sure
so they were really wobbly.
Yeah,
on the stilts, and caused.
It was quite. Yeah. It all went down fine in the end, you know what I mean? But yeah. I'm sure we were like the only thing that had happened in Trebannock since the mines had shut. And they were sort of quite grateful, but they were also sort of throwing rocks at us.
They didn't quite know what to do, did they? Usually they were on their own.
My biggest memory was just having to take the stage down. There was just me and Riley left, pretty much, and him being the older man was stood up telling me what to do, and I, being the younger man, was crawling under a 1 foot high steel deck in cold, wet mud on the top of a Welsh mountain at about 1 a.m. and doing all the bolts.
What did Riley teach you?
Everything, all sorts. Just
anything,
just,
you know. What one thing do you think? Just Riley taught me how to do that.
Just brilliant common sense. But I don't know if he taught me that the most efficient way to do something is the laziest way to do something. But I always look at like. Think about it in a lazy way, you know, to find just the because so many jobs you have to do and redo, and you know, you might have to do them 100 times, and so you don't want a complicated version of doing that job. You want like a really simple, quick version. And I still teach people doing tents to just be like, you call it lazy, but actually, it's efficiency. But he taught us brilliant things of
knotting,
levering, stuff and putting stuff up in the air and tying knots with cables and clever things with rope and string. And
because I was with you at, you know, I was thinking about the Immortal show in the park and turning up in Cooper's Fields to do that. It's a strong memory that I've got.
Yeah.
And the day I arrived on site was the day that Riley died at that Immortal show, and you were already there, but you'd arrived that morning.
Was the tent, were we just laying the tent out at that point? Yeah, I think it was my birthday as well.
Might well have been, actually.
Chucking it down with rain. There was about five of us to put the tent up. Normally it takes a good 12 or 13 people to put that tent up, and I think there were five of us that day.
And I was cooking dinner.
Yeah, me, you, Tim, Jack Studdart, Lisa's brother, Blob.
Jim Blob, John Blob.
Andy, who lost the end of his finger because he came in a little bit.
Oh, Andy, senior.
Senior, worse for wear.
He's dead now.
My friend Max.
Max, he was on the original tent crew.
Yeah, he came out a few times, That's because, of course, going back to the no doors on the tent, how did that work? Well, that was the only gig it ever went up with no doors, because then the third time we went and put it up was on the field at Cold Ashton, and we built the doors. Me and Paddy built the doors, and then me and Barnes painted them. And we only obviously had a limited amount of time with that tent, because me and Barnes were still painting like the second coats on those doors under the dome, because we'd had to drop the tent, so we had to lay all 12 door sides out and all 12 doors out inside the 10 meter diameter ring that cupola makes. It was pretty, and we painted them till it was daylight again, and we got absolutely hammered because there was a lot of hammerite thinners, which is pretty nasty and toxic, and the hammerite paint, and we drank a lot of cider, I expect, and probably special brew. And then me and Barnes had a fight, we did break dancing, we just had a mental night because we just had to do all this painting. It was the last opportunity, and then the next time the whole thing went up. And Paddy, who'd very wisely gone to bed early because it was a bit of a big day getting the rest of the tent down, loading it in the lorry, etc., etc., woke up with the biggest headache ever, probably caused by me and Barnes doing extremely noisy painting until about 9 o'clock in the morning. Painting, fighting, breakdancing, general.
And that is where you remember the what happened there when we had the tent up in Cold Ashton.
With the army arrival.
What was that?
Honestly, it's beyond belief. I think it was.
It's in the newspaper. We got a newspaper cutting.
Yeah, there was. We got the tent up on top of the hill at Cold Ashton, just off the A46 north of Bath. I lived down at the bottom of that hill now, and quite whether it had shown up on radar or something, but there's a military helicopter flies right over the top of us. And we go, military helicopter, and it's me and Paddy and Dennis and Barnes living outside in the trucks. And you must have been coming from home.
I was just commuting.
Yeah. And Max was there as well. And anyway, like an hour or something after this military helicopter's circled over, it's like two army Land Rovers pull in, and they're like signalling corps, you know, the little trailer and the massive antenna off the top. And they like razz into the field and then stop. And we could see them on the radios. And they go, whatever they were radioing back in. So we kind of walk over to go, you know, all right, everything okay. Anyway, the next thing, they kind of wheel spin and zip out of the field again. We were just thinking, what, has a helicopter gone over and said, Sarge, there's a flying saucer or something?
Yeah.
There's a UFO on Cold Ashton Hill. And so they've actually had to send an army unit out to investigate because it's a gen. And they've gone on the radio, Sarge, it's a big tent. We don't know. It's not a flying saucer.
There could not have been any news in Bath that day because it was page two on the Bath Chronicle.
It was quite bizarre.
Army called because of worry over a spaceship. UFO in Cold Ashton.
It did look like you couldn't, you know, as you drove around the A46 and from the M4,
yeah.
Quite a variety of places you can see the top of that hill. You can see it all the way from Bristol, all up and down the M5. You can see that hill. And when it was new, it would properly reflect the sunlight. It was beautifully silver and reflective and shiny and classic 1950s paranoia.
It was like that film, wasn't it? What was the film where they all came out? It came from outer space.
The day the Earth stood still.
Yeah, one of those. I mean, we were quite pleased that at the time, you know, that it, when it was all made, that it was quite good fun that it looked like a spaceship, you know, spaceship design. It looks like a spaceship. And because you had no visible signs of support from the outside either. There were no outside guy ropes, or still isn't, is there?
Yeah, take the guy ropes off.
Visible signs of support from the outside of that tent.
Yeah, almost stays quite unique in that respect for big tops. Let's see. Still haven't seen other big tops where they take off their external guise and just leave it supported by the tent.
So we also did a load of kind of ancillary things as well as the shows, didn't we? In terms of, you know, the tent fires, juggling conventions, continental drifts gigs and things like that, which I think just brought us in some money and got ourselves out and about.
Yeah, there was definitely several years of that leading up to that first Immortal Tour of 2004. There was a lot of that. It felt like everything was heading towards that point. And then once we were off on tour, it felt like I didn't do anything else for the last 15 years. just perpetually on tour.
And so we rehearsed that first show, Immortal, in Pontypridd.
Innes Anharad Park.
Innes Anharad Park. Innes Anharad, that's right, Innes Anharad Park. And that was quite exciting, wasn't it, setting off from there on our first...
Yeah.
Immortal tour.
Yeah.
Which show is your favourite, do you think?
Gosh, that's quite... Well, I mean, that one was really... you know, there was just something extremely exciting about doing that for the very first time, that tour, for sure. And I left all those years on the dentist chair. But it got to the fourth Immortal, where we built that donut stage. And I was... I had to do a big voiceover at the start of that show. There've been all sorts of little moments where you get a real fresh adrenaline buzz out of something absolutely brand new. So doing a lot of talking on the fourth Immortal was challenging, you know, to do that for the first time. And then it went to Taboo. I had to do singing for the first time. I'm definitely not a singer, but I got to sing, and that was pretty damn exciting for a couple of years, trying to sing. And then in the... I think it was the Labyrinth at Eden, I ended up doing a high wire walk. Never done a bloody high wire walk in my life. But we had two high wire artists, neither of whom liked the high wire we'd given them, so they did their little acrobatic lower wire piece together. And I, having built the high wire, did the high wire walk pushing a pram. So that was pretty exciting for a season. I think they've all had little moments.
Favourite gig? Have you got a favourite gig on any of the tours? Place where you think, that was a great gig going there?
Avignon. We had Cirque Electrique sat alongside us, and a little company called Le Bus, who did a projection show out of their coach called Le Caravanserai, which is just a collection of video and photographic essays from their travels down through the Sahara, out across Asia, or just their little trips they've done. And Cirque Electrique were doing a much more kid-friendly evening show, and then we were doing a more sort of adult show, really, a bit later on in the evening, and we definitely had a right little scene going in Avignon. That was like the place to come. Come and check out. And it was amazing. Oh, it was ridiculously hot, but great fun down there. Edinburgh, always exciting.
Yeah.
The first time we met and hooked up with Le Clique was the first time we took a show to Edinburgh. And in fact, every time we've gone to Edinburgh, we seem to have had to terraform the site that we put the big top on, which is challenging but quite exciting, because we've opened up two new places at least, the Fountain Bridge site and the old tram stop down Leith Walk. And the tram works in Leith Walk we've had to do in two different scenarios. Once, when the tram works were still an old, dilapidated, derelict pile of buildings, and once when they'd knocked it all down and left a huge, enormous hole in the ground. And John Aston had to build up the bank just so it's big enough to put the tent on it. And, anyway, Edinburgh, you know, so much going on in Edinburgh. And No Fit State always seemed to make a bit of a hit there. We ride in on so many big festivals, and there's always so many people who are so interested to and engaged to have us there with them. They're all pretty good, you know. Antwerp Festival, great, really nice people.
What do you do now, Harry?
Still putting up tents, putting up wedding marquees at the moment.